Hello and welcome to the GAK.co.uk Guitar Shop Podcast. I am your host, Mark Packham, who is with me this evening.
Hello, my name's Jay. I'm the assistant manager here in the guitar store.
Hello, my name's Matt and I'm here for guitar stuff.
And I'm Joe and I'm here for bass things.
I thought I'd try and throw you off the joke.
How are you all doing this evening, gentlemen?
Yeah, fine.
I thought you could take over as manager.
I was gonna maybe just start inventing job roles each week. In fact, from now on, I'm gonna have a different job role each week, which is
that's kind of like real life.
What
Amazing. Oh dear.
Been up to much of note this week, gentlemen?
No, I set my pedal board up again.
Oh, well,
which one?
Guitar wise,
well, yeah, seven.
Yeah. Which pedal board?
My main one. I bought a neat little MIDI foot controller to control my Strymon timeline.
How's that impacted on the real estate situation?
Good, it's fine, it's diddy, it's good. That and an M5, the two best pedals you can possibly ever buy.
The M5, definitely.
In fact, I sold really a lot of stuff because I just thought I just don't need it. The M5 just covers...
How much money do you think you got tied up in pedals?
I don't know. I had to do my insurance quite the other day. It took me a while.
God...
I think I just had to do it as one generic lot in the end. I was just like,
Guitar, pedal, stuff. Gents, this evening we're going to be talking budget-ish.
Cool.
So a few weeks ago we talked about our dream rigs and what we would have for particular genres if money was no issue. This week I thought we'd try and do sound like an artist for under £1,000.
That's good.
Now, these days, for a guitar and an amp, I guess like £1,000 is kind of a reasonable budget. Yeah. It's enough to get you up and gigging and get a kind of mid-range guitar, I guess.
Well, I mean, you can get a pretty good guitar for half of that, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, but, you know, in the grand scheme of things, I guess it's kind of halfway up the
harder for
the
bass,
scale.
I think. Bass amps probably coming in a bit more,
you just need a bit more of a chunky rig, but we'll talk about some bass stuff in a bit. So I've got some artists written down who I thought a good overview of different tones, and also I guess would be most popular in terms of what's asked for
most
in the
good.
Store. Most good. Most. No, just stuff that people ask about, and you know, point people towards a certain setup. Really. First up, Led Zeppelin guitar wizard Jimmy Page.
Imagine if he was a wizard.
Well, we sort of... Didn't he practice the satanic arts or something?
Did he?
Yeah, he was...
Jimmy Page was into the occult?
Yeah.
Wow. No, sorry, he was into the cult.
Oh, the band, the cult?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, misrepresentation, got ya. Okay.
That's why he was a wizard, Time Machine.
Right, okay.
In the 70s, but he listened to the cult.
Yeah, got ya.
So, Jimmy Page, what guitars is he kind of known for, really, and what would be available?
I guess you sort of... You think Jimmy Page, you think Les Paul. Really?
Yeah.
You know? You think...
Class A drugs.
You think 18 string, but, you know, you can't really do an 18 string for...
I did look. I thought maybe that was the guitar we could do, but I couldn't work out a way to fit that and a decent amp into £1,000.
Can you get... Who does a... Do Epiphone do a budget 18 string, don't they? Do they do a double neck?
What's the actual model number on that? Is ES1275?
Yeah, ES1275, which may or may not still currently be available, but we can certainly find out.
I'm sure when I looked, we had some info on it, but it would be too much.
It's just
much
one of those things that Epiphone just don't make very often.
Yeah, we do get them occasionally. Yeah. So I was thinking, let's look at a Les Paul Standard.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be the place to go, really.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I just pulled up Epiphone Les Paul Standard, $299. They're still... the best if you want for like a budget Les Paul style guitar. We do a few others, but I guess, you know, Gibson design them, Gibson oversee the manufacturing and the quality control. They're just
What finishes do Epiphone have available just in the standard?
It depends. Well, in the, I think it's just the block colours, isn't it? So you can get ebony, gold top, and Pelham. Can you get Pelham blue as well?
The two that we have listed at $299 at the moment, I believe, are ebony and a it's
Heritage?
Not a wine red, but it's like a red. It's not.
Oh,
it's like a cherry finish. I forget the name of the actual finish now. But they come in at the budget that we've got here, $299. I thought that was a kind of reasonable.
And if you did want to spend a little bit more, you can get the plus top for $359 or $369, I think. And Matt's just pointing out a gold top, which is $299 as well.
$299.
Yeah.
I thought so. Yeah.
And We've also got in stock Les Paul Standard in limited edition TV Silver.
Amazing.
Oh, the TV Silver is good as well.
We've got an iPad to help us through.
Yeah, we've got a new fact finder.
We've upgraded. This isn't just us like racking our brains and finding information. It's Matt has got his iPad with him.
We gave up the member of staff that we shouted at behind that just ran around making whatever head on the wall.
It's you're like that guy who sits off to the side on Countdown. You can just check.
I always wondered like how they think of, I know they've got a dictionary, but some of the words they put out are so quick.
They're just smart dudes.
That's sort of the point of the game.
That's why they're on it and not you and me.
Anyway, Jimmy Page. So Epiphone Les Paul Standard, I guess, is going to be your go-to guitar. Yeah. If you can spend a bit more, you can get a Sunburst that I guess would be a bit more.
Yeah, they're like 359 or something. And, they look really good.
One just quick thing actually I'll add in, which would be another thing which you see him play a lot, which we've do. Danelectro DC59s.
Well, actually. Yeah, I thought about that, actually putting that as the guitar on this rig, but I just think that the Les Paul's
The Les Paul's a little bit more iconic, I suppose.
Yeah, definitely. In terms of amps, I guess it was Marshall, and I've gone for head and cab. There's a few combos available. Marshall MA50 head at 314 and Marshall MA412, 257. Matt, what's the deal behind the MA range?
Is it modelling? Is the MA stuff modelling?
It's not like you've got like the JMD, which is a slightly more expensive range than that. But they're valve driven, aren't they?
They're all valve.
Far Eastern built. But they're just like much more on that budget range of things. So they look like a, I suppose they look like a DSL really,
yeah,
don't they?
Yeah, yeah. They are just basically a budget all valve entry level.
Head
valve guitar stack, yeah. 50 watts. Well, I think
not all valve. Did
it's all valve.
No,
all valve.
Really?
Yeah,
it's pretty, all valve. Pretty
for, what are they? 300 quid.
Yeah,
quid.
Yeah. That's the idea that they're Far Eastern made, and it's your kind of first entry into an all valve head.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And having plugged them in, albeit not for a little while, they do sound really good for the money. Mm. I can't really think of any other all valve.
I think
head
the only other thing that comes close is. Probably going to be the Valve King, the PV Valve King, which is $399. And they're great. I mean, I think you know they're more towards the more quote unquote extreme end of the spectrum.
We've got about three X demo at the moment, which I'm going to pop up on eBay next week. So
oh, nice.
If anyone's interested in a Valve King, keep your eyes on the eBay.
Some bargains coming up on Joe's eBay store, and I guess. You know, I went for the 412. Probably could go for a 212 if you were a bit tighter on the budget, but I mean, it's Jimmy
get
Page.
A 412, just plug it in. Yeah. Just plug it in and turn it up.
So,
that's my view on it.
In terms of pedals, the MA50 has got a drive channel on it, but I was thinking, and again, in line with what Jimmy Page actually uses, he uses a Boss SD1.
Does he?
Yeah.
Does he still?
Yep, that's from whenever they did the last gigs. But yeah, I was looking on a kind of write up of his current setup. And yeah, SD1.
People can't see you when you do air quotes. They can't see over radio.
You do that a lot. You air quote all the time on our podcast.
It's better than saying air quote.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. Oh, I start saying air quote.
Okay. So yeah, Boss SD1. What's that going to give you that perhaps the drive channel on the MA?
It's going to give you a little bit more top end. It's going to help you cut through a little bit more. I think they're quite a low gain but quite a sharp sounding overdrive pedal. And I think the nice thing is you go for something like an MA50. You've got your clean sound. You've got lead sound. You've got a boost section on there as well. But it's nice that you're going to have your amp channels, but then you can have an SD1 to use either with clean or with drive. So I think you can.
They're quite abrasive, aren't they? The SD1.
Yeah, I think it'll really push the sound of the Marshall into that kind of like fat, sort of Les Paul esque sort of drive.
They're really cool. I really like the SD1.
Without going into metal territory, which you can do on a Marshall.
The thing is, quite often people say, "Well, why go SD1 over DS1 or whatever?" The DS1 is more, which are the two sort of. I guess entry level.
Still in the same chassis though. Still amazingly built.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And
incredible.
You can pick up a Boss pedal
for less than 40 quid. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, the SD1 is just a bit more. Yeah, a bit more top endy, a bit more abrasive. Cuts through a little bit more. I actually used it for vocals.
Really?
Yeah. When I was playing in a garagey hardcore band a couple of years ago, and I used it for just to make it sound really. Make my voice sound even more abrasive and horrible.
Well, you lose some of your guitar sound, I think, with an SD1.
Yeah,
with the DS1, because it's more
it's keyboard and guitar, isn't it, the DS1?
Yeah.
I'm actually using it tonight through my synth.
Are you? A DS1?
Yeah, yeah. They market it as being for keyboards or guitar.
Still got a DS1.
And I have one, so I was like, ugh.
It's funny, isn't it? Boss, you know, they are kind of... they are a strange company in that fact that, you know, they will try and go after kind of a lot of different markets. I never knew that. Yeah. So they market it as a keyboard product as well.
Yeah. Keyboard distortion. Mm. Yeah, what keyboard are you using?
I've got an Alesis Micron, just a sort of quite basic little synth. I'm running it through a bass amp. I'm just using it for my bass synth sounds.
Bass
but
stuff.
I have my big muff, and I tried to use that as like a drive boost for it, and
it just all loses everything.
It loses everything.
Yeah.
In fact, surprised that. And the DS1 kept it all, which I thought
like
was weird.
An SD1, talking of that sort of thing, is very, very good for things like sequences or arpeggiators on keyboards. Because, yeah, if you plug something like a Big Muff in, you lose all note definition, where an SD1 or a DS1 just kind of helps keep a little bit more that kind of grindy sort of definition. Works, yeah, it works really well. I used to use one with... I had an SH201.
Amazing.
Which is people at home might not know.
The 201, sorry. I'm thinking the 101.
No, the 201. You've got a 201 as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's, they don't make it anymore. They make the Gaia now.
Yeah, the Gaia's replaced it. Gaia's got practically the same thing on it, but you've got a third voicing on there as well.
It's a digital polyphonic 46 key, something like that. Like a 3-octave keyboard. It's just got some great really cool pad sounds, really
some
cool
real
bass
good
sounds.
Sort of like 101 imitation sounds on there.
I think it's actually, you know, going for something like a Gaia, and this is a bit off topic for guitars, but actually, if you're a guitar player and you want some synths, it's actually a really good one to go for.
Absolutely, something like that, yeah.
Because most things now are USB, and you can sequence via USB, you can use them as kind of MIDI controller MIDI keyboards and stuff like that.
Back on topic with Jimmy Page. just to round out the setup. I've gone for a wah pedal again. You'll see that in a few of the artist setups that we're going to be talking about tonight. For Jimmy Page, again in line with what he was using on the last few gigs, Vox V847 wah.
Yeah.
Which I guess up there with the Crybaby in terms of popularity. One of the two most famous wahs.
Well,
I mean
the history lesson. It's a very good documentary if you want to watch it, which is all about the history of the Crybaby. But actually, they were the same pedal, marketed by two different companies.
Really?
The Crybaby and the
Crybaby and the Vox.
And the Vox.
Vox was Thomas Jennings company, which was UK, and it wasn't Dunlop then. It was someone else, can't remember, who did it in America, and they were the same circuit basically.
Crazy.
And then one company bought one and one company bought the other, and then they just gradually sort of changed over time. But invented by a guy who worked for Vox, and it was Vox Organs had this particular like mid control that was on a switch that you could switch on, and then someone went, oh, you should, like, yeah, it'd be good to be able to use that on a keyboard. So he took that part of the circuit and put it on a variable resistor, like a pot.
Right. Yeah.
And was like, yeah, this is wicked. So he was playing the organ, and then he was like, but someone could like put it on your foot. And they went, that's bonkers, can't do that. And then they tried it, and yeah, suddenly the wah pedal was born. Pretty mental, isn't it?
So what do you get tone wise off a modern V847 that you don't get off a Crybaby?
You get a little bit more mid range, I tend to find. I think if you're playing like funk.
Okay.
Like, or you want something that kind of gives you a little bit more of that kind of like honky, like mid range, like more vocal.
Yeah.
I think you get that from a Vox. And if you want something that's a little bit brighter, a little bit more top end, a bit like Slash or something like that, an original Crybaby works much better. It kind of just gives you a little bit more of a top end push, really.
Crybaby, I tend to think, is a little bit cleaner sounding as well, whereas the 847. Although it shouldn't really give it you any more sort of distortion, it just the frequencies that it works on, it sounds a bit more growly.
Yeah, but there's so many out there these days as well, aren't there? Just so many different.
Total wise, that brings us up to £978 for Jimmy Page. So I guess we're kind of at total. Is there anything else you can think of that might be good if you want his type of tone that you think people might pick up? Any other pedals?
I would say maybe. If you say you went for a combo, you know, or you were, you know, simmer down, I would say actually maybe something like a flashback delay, because obviously used a lot of Echoplex,
okay,
a lot of that kind of tape echo sort of thing.
Or TC Electronics flashback.
Yeah, something like that for that kind of really fat tape echo sound.
Or perhaps something like MXR Carbon Copy. For
yeah, that'd be really good actually, yeah.
For something a bit more analogue delay.
Those are the two, without wanting to go too off topic. I think probably we've spoken about this before, but not for a while. The delay pedals, whether you know, the two main types of delays really are analog and digital. And I think the two front runners at the moment are the TC Electronics flashback for the digital side and the MXR Carbon Copy for the analog side. You know, if you're talking budget, I mean, obviously I'll always recommend a RE20, the Space Echo, you know, but if you want something a bit more usable and a bit more sort of budget friendly, I guess, then yeah, the flashback or the Carbon Copy. And you know what you get from the Carbon Copy, I think, is a real authentic like, not, it's not like crisp and clear, it's a bit muffled, and
I always describe it as a bit vibey.
Yeah absolutely, I think that's a great word to describe it. Whereas the flashback is very crisp, very clear, and you know, there's an analog setting on there. It doesn't sound as good as the Carbon Copy. And the flashback is probably the one to go for if you're going to be doing a lot of stuff. But I think if you want like a budget analog delay pedal, the Carbon Copy is so good. They sound absolutely brilliant. I love them.
They're awesome.
I absolutely love them.
So a few other options there if you want to switch out anything we've talked about for Jimmy Page. Now, the other famous Jimmy, Jimi Hendrix.
Oh.
How
Jimmy, are you thinking of?
Jimmy Carr.
Jimmy Buffett.
Jimi Hendrix. Let's see if we can get to Jimi Hendrix, fairly authentic Hendrix tone, under £1,000. Now, the guitar that I picked out, and you could probably switch this out for maybe something a bit more high-end and lose something else on the list, but I went for the Squire Vintage Modified 70 Strat. Now, obviously, Hendrix was using like a kind of late 60s Strat for most stuff.
68, I think, was the year.
Okay.
68,
I think, yeah, was the year he played that one. And as we've talked about before, I mean, it wasn't like he went, oh yeah, I'm playing that vintage 68 Strat. It's 1969, Jimmy.
Yeah.
It was just a Strat. It was just, you know, it was just an off-the-wall kind of model. And did they not do many left-hands were like pretty much custom order at that point?
And do you know what? I don't know, but I assume, I mean, it's not like today where we've got, you know, 40 left-handed guitars on the wall. I don't think that was really an option.
But with those late 70s ones, obviously you went into...
Late 60s, rather.
So they were like veneer rosewood board rather than a slab rosewood board, like bigger headstocks, kind of different tuners. It was really kind of moving into that sort of 70s period by that point. So it'd probably be one of the closest in terms of the look.
What are the kind of features that are on that vintage modified Strat that kind of bring it in line with a late 60s or early 70s Strat?
Well, I mean, they use basswood or basswood for the body rather than, say, like an older, but they have a similar, like, tonal property. It's a little bit lighter. Older's probably just going to maybe cut through a little bit more. But it's mainly, when you see these, it's the pickup design and the kind of cosmetics, really, with these sort of things that's going to bring it. Like, and like I said, really, that big headstock's kind of the main thing.
Yeah, I mean, they do look very cool. They look very the part, you know, they look like a late 60s, early 70s.
But it's that
Strat.
Olympic white, really, isn't it? If you've kind of got an Olympic white Strat, it's just like...
Yeah, the only thing actually is different. They've got black pickup covers, haven't they, on the vintage modifieds?
Yeah.
And a rosewood board, so it depends whether you'd want to go for rosewood or...
I really like the vintage modified series. I think it's something that... That Squire are doing really, really well at the moment. It's, you know, and I think one of the reasons why it's black pickups and black, I think they're black tone knobs as well, aren't they?
Yes.
Yeah. On those, yeah. It's they change a couple of things, so it's not, they're not saying, yeah, look, this is a like for like representation. The vintage modified series is also where you get the Jaguars and Jazzmasters are all part of the vintage modified series, and they, you know, they're not a complete like for like replica. Thank you. Of like a 65.
They've got a few features that are kind of
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I think the vintage modified series is really, really very,
actually,
very good.
Actually, in the 70s one, if you were after kind of a Gilmore look, I mean, the 70s one is,
oh yeah, they
did
a black one as well,
black,
don't they?
Black plate, yeah. Black pickups with maple board. I mean, it's,
yeah, good option if you want to go down the Gilmore route.
Yeah, I think as we've said before, like Squire have kind of gone, well, hold on, what's everyone kind of after at the moment? It's like one vintage kit, but yeah, on a much more budget. Yeah. Scale.
£255. Probably great money. The best bit about that, yeah, is they're a great playing
Duncan
strat.
Duncan design pickups in those as well.
Yeah, yeah.
But 10 years ago, if you wanted to spend £250 on a guitar, you would be limited on like finishes and like especially limited on aesthetics.
You would probably walk in, there'd be, you know, 2-3 models now, yeah. Even just on the Squire range, you could get all of the vintage modified range, which is like 4 guitars,
yeah,
per strat and per telly, yeah. So that's like 8 guitars,
and then there's all the like affinities. The classic vibe range is a little bit more,
yeah, but amazing, we're only talking, yeah, the classic instead of Indonesian.
The classic vibe stuff is brilliant. I'm a real advocate of the classic vibe stuff. I don't think Hank Marvin's on this list, is he? But if you wanted that Hank Marvin look and sound and style, there's the classic vibe 50s
in Fiesta Red.
Yeah. Which is just amazing.
It's just a Hank Marvin strat. It's
the colour gives you all the time.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
If it wasn't that colour,
it's a Hank Marvin strat without the gold hardware, and it looks and sounds amazing. That classic vibe 50s is probably my favourite of the Squire strats. I think that's absolutely brilliant. So the classic vibe stuff is really good, and I think, I know I've said this before, and I know I said that I probably shouldn't say it, but I think some of the high-end Squire stuff is really rivaling some of the low, the cheaper end of the Fender stuff at the moment.
Yeah, I completely agree.
You know, I mean, I'm primarily talking about that classic vibe 50s Strat, and there's also the classic vibe 50s Tele.
Yeah, which is
in
amazing.
Butterscotch.
Yeah,
you know,
like
the
B90.
No. The one with the Jazzmaster neck.
Actually, that's the
Tele Special, I think. Oh. No, the one I'm talking, there's a 50s. Classic vibe 50s Tele in Butterscotch Blonde with a black guard. I mean, it's a no-caster and it's like £300.
And also now they do the 60s ones. They do black with double bound.
Sunburst double bound. Yeah.
The black one's awesome with a matching headstock as well.
Nice.
Yeah.
I struggled a little bit for the amp on this, and sort of a cop-out. I've gone for basically the combo version of what we talked about with Jimmy, yeah, Page. So the Marshall MA100C comes in at $399. I would, if I had the choice, probably still go for Head and Cab, but just because of budgetary constraints,
yeah,
mm-hmm, and Jimmy Hendrix stuff.
What head did he use?
It will be like old Plexi.
Just an old Plexi, yeah. Okay.
Can you think of anything else combo-wise that comes in under $399 that sort of...
Unless you went for something that was got a lot of modelling...
Yeah,
something like probably not really.
Like a Spider or something.
Yeah, like I really like the Vipers.
Yeah, the PV Viper.
Yeah, the PV Viper's really good.
The light show that they put on when there's nothing plugged in has been kind of enticing me,
yeah,
every time I walk past.
I still really like the Vox VT series as well.
Yeah.
I think the Vox VT range is really good, and there's like a couple of Marshall sounds on there.
So you can go down the modelling.
Maybe you could go down... I mean, you could go down the route of, say, like a... VR Vox, like a VR30,
yeah, what, an AC30, kind of, yeah,
a bit more,
I mean,
like top boosty, a little bit more British,
yeah,
and then kind,
I mean,
of
you could go down the AC15 and AC30 VR, but it's not very Hendrix, is it?
Well, I don't know, I mean, it's just got that vintage vibe about it, hasn't it? Single, yeah, channel.
Well, I would, the reason
I really like them. I'm not criticising them in the slightest. Right. I just don't think it's particularly Hendrix.
Marshall's probably going to be,
yeah, good. Yeah. I mean, the reason I went for the Marshall is, you know, obviously it's that classic British sound,
yeah,
but also it's pretty uncomplicated, and you know, I would think that you'd build the Hendrix sound a bit more with pedals, and yeah, especially because Jim Dunlop do an entire Hendrix range of pedals,
yeah, mm,
it's probably worth looking at that. The three that I picked out were the Hendrix Mini Fuzz Face,
which have just landed, actually. They're the last ones in the range of the minis that we've been waiting for.
How many of those did they do?
Three.
Yeah.
60s or 70s and a Hendrix, basically.
Oh, right.
What's the voicing on the Hendrix like? Why have they done that alongside the other two?
Well, I mean, you've got the red one, which is kind of very bright and very raspy, and then the 70s one, which is a germanium transistor, is that kind of real garagey sort of thing. And the Hendrix ones, actually, I tend to find a little less distorted, a little bit softer sounding, but kind of work really well with the amp, just pushing kind of just a little bit more drive, and it just sounds more like a fuzz, like a vintage fuzz.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It doesn't sound like a the fuzz you still hear now, like from Big Muffs and from Rats and stuff like that, just sounds kind of...
It's a bit more muted, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you say fuzz now and people, you know, you think about Fuzz Factory that kind of is crazy gated and makes all these squeals and stuff like that, but actually they weren't really like that at all. I mean, if you listen to Can't Get No Satisfaction by Rolling Stones, which was the first time that one was kind of really laid down on record, it's actually a kind of... It's almost like a speaker distortion.
Yeah, really. Yeah, it's like a ripped speaker kind of sound.
And the reason that you kind of get all that, he gets all that sustain, but still so much clarity, is because you're running it through an amp that's just cranked all the way.
Just turned up to, yeah.
Yeah.
All the way.
So another Dunlop Hendrix series pedal is the Wah. So still in that kind of crybaby chassis. What's the difference voicing-wise on that?
It's really bizarre because... I mean, the thing is with Hendrix, and when it comes to Wah, he did a lot of stuff with Roger Mayer, who has got his own pedal line. And I don't think he was a tech, but I think he was just around in the studio a lot. And he would, like, Jimmy would do a take and he'd play a Wah pedal, and then he would go, oh, yeah, I can make that sound better. And he'd open it up and tweak it. So I don't think he ever really used a standard.
Crybaby.
Because it was always changed.
Well, yeah, so I mean, isn't it only really what he was doing was sort of rubbing away at various points on the...
No, he was actually changing resistors.
Okay, right, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, so obviously you get like a Crybaby Classic, it's got a different inductor in it, and like a distortion circuit, different resistors. And yeah, so stuff changed a lot. And actually, the one you get now is... The only way I can describe it is very funky, very shaft. Like, it's got that kind of real waka waka to it, which when you see a lot of
it's
like
got a real what, sorry?
Waka waka.
There we go.
It's got that real Pac-Man tone.
Okay.
it's a difficult one to describe, but it's very vocal. Yeah. So when you plug it in, it's kind of really expressive. Almost one of those ones that when you play it makes you do the same action with your mouth as you do with your...
We had a big Dunlop board set up, and we actually had that Wah on there with a load of other ones. And you know, having worked here for quite a long time, you get quite cynical. It's like, oh yeah, Crybaby, just a regular Crybaby is the best. All the others
have a load of different chassis. You don't need. Yeah, yeah.
Why has this got a volume boost? You don't need that. And actually, the Hendrix one, I just played it and went, oh yeah, that's much better.
It sounds a lot better. I remember, like, sometimes you forget to, you don't always plug these things in, and then you plug it in for someone, and then all of a sudden you're like, hold on, this sounds awesome. I want to buy one.
How about the last pedal we picked out here, the Jimi Hendrix Octavio?
The biggest pedal you can
get. Okay, here's my issue with this. This is a great pedal. It's a great sounding pedal. Well, even that's not really an issue for me. I mean, it might be an issue for the main man right next to me.
The real estate agent.
I wonder if I could start an estate agency, but for pedal board real estate.
Maybe you should do that. Yeah, you should start advertising space on other people's pedal boards. Just really long cables.
It's utterly ridiculous.
The Octavio is amazing.
So
the Octavio sounds better, I think, better than anything else that does that thing, whatever that thing is.
Octave up distortion fuzz.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's, yeah, okay, well, that niche.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's the problem I have with it is it doesn't have a power supply in, so you've got to use batteries. The knobs are in a weird place, and it's huge. I want them to do a mini version. I'm desperate for them to
do the knobs on the top.
Yeah,
so you can't really access them very easily.
No,
live.
But I mean, the key to this is that is what his original.
Oh yeah, no,
like.
Totally get it. But I just in the same way as, you know, we were always crying out for a reissue of the Fuzz Face because it was, you know, so obtuse.
Those minis have made things
10 times better, and they've got a power supply in, but I really want them to do that with the Octavio.
It's got an on-off switch. So you turn it off.
But that...
When you stop using it, turn it off.
Oh, that's brilliant. Thanks.
cheers, Matt.
But actually...
They sound great, though. They really sound brilliant.
I mean, the thing is, and I suppose, maybe not so much now, but part of the charm of these things was you plug it in, and it sounded different, like, every time you plugged it in, because... The batteries always sounded different, but you know, like they die very quickly, and then you're kind of left with this sort of like sagging battery sound, and I don't know, there is a sort of like vintage charm to these sort of things, but it's very that thing, you know, it's very that octave up fuzz, and it's sometimes just difficult to know when you might use it. It works really well when an amp's turn up really loud. I think you get a little bit more of the effect.
I think at low
volumes it just sounds a bit spluttery and a bit.
It's one of those things where it's kind of like a wow, that sounds amazing switch, where you've got your amp really loud and you're thinking, yeah, sounds really good. Oh yeah, I'm really rocking now. Put that in and it's like, wow, that sounds amazing. But yeah, not for everyday use.
Yeah, that, you couldn't. I mean, it's not like plugging in a Rat and going, yeah, I'm going to play like some loads of power chords and like this. It's like you can't really do that. It's designed for kind of like
single notes,
little lead breaks, and it works better on a neck pickup than it does on a on a bridge pickup,
which is weird for a distortion.
Yeah,
it's just really you get weird. That kind of fluty. Kind of weirdness. The last thing I put on our Hendrix total, because I had a few quid left over, is the Levi's Monterey strap.
I think you're opening up yourself to a world of pain here, because if you start including a strap in this, but not a strap in, say, the Jimmy Page one.
Yeah, but you could get any strap for that. I'll just put this down because this is a reissue of the strap that Hendrix used
at the
Monterey Pop Festival. Yeah, I thought just a nice way to round it out. Okay, let's move on to...
How much did Jimmy's come to?
£981.
For all those things.
Yeah, so you got enough from some picks things. And some patch leads.
Some pick a mix at the end.
Yes, go out and get some pick a mix. Okay, skipping forward. Jack White... I guess the kind of newest guitar hero on our list. Jack White's a bit of a weird one because he's got like loads of weird vintage instruments and stuff that isn't necessarily available now, or stuff that we don't do. But I was having a look through, and actually these days he's playing stuff that is a bit more
standard.
Those endorsements have kicked in a bit.
Well, not really. I think he's playing. He's playing vintage guitars, but he's playing like stuff that you can actually buy a version of now. So he's mainly playing Gretsch stuff these days, hollow bodies, solid bodies, and just some more. He is playing a few weirder bits, but I guess the equivalent for us to come in budget is the Gretsch Electromatic Project.
Yeah.
Nice solid body, and they've had a few upgrades recently, haven't they?
Yeah, the 5434T.
Okay.
I think is the model now, isn't it? It was the 5420. I think it's the 5434 now.
No, you're thinking of the hollow body.
No, the hollow bodies are something different. I'll use the fat machine. I'll use the fat machine.
The 5420 is the 5420 is the hollow body. That's the electromatic.
Let's see.
Is it the 5424?
Yeah.
Or is that what you said?
No, I said 5434.
Let's see who's right. Oh, okay. Who's the best?
Gretsch 5434 Project.
Oh, okay.
Back of the neck.
That's why, he's the manager and you're only the assistant.
that's the test.
I think we take it every week and I failed again.
Just do a bit of reading.
I think we got our wires crossed because I was thinking of the.
You were thinking of
the
hollow body,
which is the 5420.
I think the reason you've probably not put a hollow body on there is it will take up a lot of the budget when it comes down to an 85.
Yeah. And also,
actually, these are. They're chambered basswood bodies with an arch maple top. So you're still going to get quite a lot of rest. You use a lot of gain, like he does, if you listen to like Dead Weather and stuff. There's still like loads of fuzz and loads of drive.
And
I plugged when we talked about the Big Muff last week, and we were saying about the fella. You heard someone plug one in. You're like, "Yeah, sound awesome."
Yeah.
But we plugged it into a Gretsch hollow body, and as soon as I turned it on, the whole thing just started vibrating.
He was using a 5420.
And I think these are going to be kind of maybe a little bit more reserved than that. They're probably not going to feed back as much, but hollow body, which is keeping me in line with kind of vintage Gretsch. But now they use the kind of Fender designed or Gretsch designed Dynasonics rather than the kind of the bigger ones, which always had a similar tone, but these just come in like on the money.
For the money, those Gretches are brilliant.
Yeah, they look absolutely fantastic.
Yeah,
we've got a video of Lewis playing.
I was about to say, probably playing some Taylor Swift or something.
Most definitely.
Which he always gets grief for on YouTube, which is great. But those Gretsch are doing some great stuff at that range. I really like the what's the sort of futuristic-y looking one? Is it the Corvette? The CVT?
Yes.
100 or something?
CVT. And they're much less expensive than they
Yeah, they're like £200. And they are really cool guitars. I mean, not really what you want if you want to get that Jack White sound. But I think it's the CVTs are a really good guitar if you want something budget and you want something that sounds a little bit different, maybe for like a sort of backup guitar, and you don't want your, you know, you don't want to have like, say you've got your like Les Paul or whatever, and you want something else, but you don't just want to buy like an Epiphone Les Paul as a backup guitar. Those CVTs are a great option. I think they're really, really cool. I really like them.
I think these kind of fall into that category as well. If you wanted a backup to a Les Paul,
absolutely.
For the money, they are $355.
Yeah,
coming and under an Epiphone one, and they're good fun and something different.
Whether it still fit within your budget as well, when we combine the other things, they do a Bixby version.
I think it will just fit in.
And might just fit under there, unless you've got a couple of extra quid to spend.
Essential.
Because I think, yeah, Bixby, you know, okay. If you kind of want that.
A bit of whammy in there.
I realise that no one can see me go, wow, and pretend I'm using a Bixby.
Like air quotes.
Amp-wise, Vox AC15. I thought something a bit kind of gnarly, something with a bit of gain to it, but not. You know, not Marshall, not kind of chunky sounding, just something a bit ratty and aggressive.
And the thing about the AC15 is it is a lot more. It's a lot more mid-rangey. I mean, you could go Fender, you could go Blues Junior, but I think the AC15 is a bit more. A bit bigger and a bit boomier. I mean, you'll hear. As well, I say every week, you'll hear not a single bad word about the Blues Junior from me. I think that amp is absolutely brilliant, and I'm in a constant power struggle going on in my brain between whether the AC15 is better or the Blues Junior is better. And I think if you were going for that Jack White sound, big open chords, I think they sound. I think they just sound better for a Vox. I think it's a lot more, like I said, a lot more mid range, and I think it drives a little bit better probably as well.
Yeah, because you just want single channel, and you kind of want it to be loud, but you want the crunch as well. And obviously, because you've got master and
gain
on the single channel, you can just kind of get that little bit of crunch. And actually, like pedal wise. Just give an head on that. It would work really well with the pedal that I was going to suggest, which is actually different to the one you've put down.
Oh, well, the one I put down, I wanted something that's going to be had a bit of gain, but not a distortion pedal. Something fuzzy, but something a bit different, because obviously he uses quite bonkers guitar sounds sometimes. So something that's a bit out of left field and something a bit different. I went for the Bigfoot Octopus Prime.
I would have thought that would be ideal.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know what Matt's going to suggest, but
I was going to suggest an MXR Blue Box.
Okay.
Because it uses a lot of fuzz, and it would work well with the drive channel analysis, but it uses that kind of octave down sort of boom as well.
Well, I guess, I mean, that's going to be similar to what you're getting out of the Octopus Prime, I guess.
Well, this is octave up, where...
I thought it sounded very Jack White in the video.
It does. I mean, once again, I think, you know...
Reese,
yeah.
Yeah, I think, because these are octave up, and I know he uses a lot of stuff with octave down, so I was thinking, depending on which way you want to go.
Whether or not you want to play Seven Nation Army.
Happy or sad.
It's well worth actually popping onto the page and watching the video. All of these, so this, just to reiterate this is the Bigfoot Engineering Octopus Prime. We are real advocates of the Bigfoot stuff.
All handmade locally.
The owner of the company, who's the guy who builds all the pedals, is a guy called Reese. He used to work for full disclosure. He used to work here, and so he's all of our mates. And he's brilliant. And the gear that he produces is just stunning. Some of the stuff that he makes is just brilliant. He makes the fuzz that he does is called the King Fuzz, which is actually my favourite fuzz pedal that I've ever played. But this is the Octopus Prime, and it's well worth just popping onto our website and having a look at the videos that he's done, because not only was it the first videos that we did after Mark managed to get himself a hold of a green screen, and so it looks as though it's been you can very realistically see that Reese is in the jungle
with Bigfoot. Emailed us asking how we've got the budget to go to a real jungle.
Have I just given away the game there? Yeah, but Reese is a great guitarist, really really innovative guitarist. I've always been a big fan of his. And yeah, like the videos that, that he does really, really show off the pedal in a really good light.
Also worth mentioning, Matt mentioned the Blue Box, still built in America for not a lot of money.
Yeah. Same with all the MXR stuff.
Yeah.
It's all it like the, all of that MXR Dunlop stuff is.
It's all American built.
It's all American built. The rep was down a few months ago. And he was saying that he went over there, he went to the Dunlop factory, the Dunlop and the MXR factory, and they will not outsource anything anywhere because they don't want to lose any of the quality. And so everything is done, like all the strings are made in America, they don't outsource the string production to anyone. It's crazy. Everything is done in house, and we were trying to get a hold of some of the, like a display unit. A while back, and he said that it's really difficult for them to get any display stuff because they make it themselves. They won't outsource anything. All of the pedal boards and stuff that they make, even for us here in the stores, they make them themselves.
Even things like stickers and stuff like that. Yeah, they have their own marketing photo studio.
That's
room.
So good. That's why all this Dunlop MXR stuff is all so good.
And it helps keep the price down.
Oh, it certainly helps keep the price down. Apart from anything, they're just not dealing with anywhere near as many returns. Because they know the stuff's going to always work.
So there we go. Jack White, if you go with the Octopus Prime and the AC15, comes in at 963. Probably a bit less if you go for the Blue Box, but check it all out online.
Is that our most affordable one then? Jack White is the most affordable one.
Yeah, you could sound like him.
981, 978.
Yeah. Yes, I've got some other guitar players down here, but maybe we've got a lot to do, so we'll do a part two next week. But Joe Branton, you haven't mentioned Billy Sheehan so far this podcast.
No, exactly, I know, and I missed him out.
You missed the last two?
Shh, no, I got it right at the end of the week before. Maybe I didn't.
I think we did it the week you were off.
We did it for you.
So I'm 2 weeks out. So it makes sense that as we're doing the artists for under a grand, that I should give Billy Sheehan some proper shine time.
So how can you sound like Billy Sheehan for under £1,000?
Well, it's very difficult.
Okay.
Boy, how much are the lessons? Are they included in the price?
Yeah, no one sent me any ripped footage of the new lesson DVDs from Billy Sheehan yet. But it's harder for bass, I think, because I think bass amps, I mean, if we look back at kind of the guitar amps that we suggested, I suppose we've got, we were looking at amps that were like, I suppose they are actually all sort of around 450. I really struggled to find like a fully gigging bass amp for £500. Very conveniently, there is. Well, I know I'm starting on amp, but it's very, very important to Billy Sheehan's sound.
Work backwards.
He was exactly. He used to be endorsed by Ampeg for an awful long time, and he had some differences with the company with how they were manufacturing some stuff a few years ago, and he jumped ship to Hartke, where he's been using, kind of amazingly for an artist of his sort of high ranking, he's using HA 5500s and LH 1000s, both heads that come in at under £500, which is
just goes to show,
which is ridiculous. And he uses his AK 410s and AK 15 inch cabs. The AK series is Hartke's version of the classic Ampeg cabs that are all properly lined with cotton still. So no expense spared there, but they're not Hartke's most expensive cabs. So he's kind of
he's poor, basically.
Yeah, he is.
he's hit hard times. Please buy his lessons.
That's a Mr. Big audience, not what it used to be.
Not so
big. But that said, I couldn't fit any of that stuff into the under a grand. Fortunately, Hartke do their 112C combo in the High Drive series, which has a very, very similar head unit to what they've released in the LH series, which the LH series head is what Billy Sheehan uses on his neck humbucker, because he has different amps for different pickups. So the LH series is kind of a really big, fat, sort of boomy valve preamp range. And the 112C high drive combo has a very kind of similar setup to that, and I think you can get a lot of that sort of LH tone. But the high drive combo also has a graphic EQ, a banding, which Billy Sheehan uses on the HA 550 series or 5500 series. So you can kind of, I think this head is a great way of blending up the two elements of Billy Sheehan's sound, which makes it very, very good. And they come in at like 499. Also, when you're only using like a single 12 and Billy Sheehan uses kind of such an aggressive sound, that high drive speaker, which is like half aluminium and half paper, really helps to kind of get out that top end that you'll need.
For that kind of great
clangy tone.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I must admit, like missed a bit. Like every so often you're like, on YouTube, yeah, I watched Mr. Big, I watched Paul Gilbert rip it up with Billy Sheehan and that other dude.
Brilliant. Good knowledge.
Well, you know, all right. Who was it?
I don't know either.
So, what sort of bass would you go for? I mean, he's obviously got his Yamaha signatures, but they're over £1,000.
Yeah, exactly. His Yamaha Attitude, which is actually over $2,000. His new Attitude. Very, very good though. You should definitely buy one, bass people. But he also released a BB714BS. Unfortunately named, but which was his signature model based on the basses that he originally played in the 80s when he was playing. He first moved from precision bass to Yamaha and he played their Yamaha BBs. Again, I couldn't find a way of fitting the 714 BS into this £1,000 category, so very, very fortunately, Yamaha also have the very bass that I use, the Yamaha BB44, which is now coming in at £310, which is not how cheap it was when I bought them. but they're fantastic, and you still get that really essential precision-based tone, but with just kind of a bit more of that Yamaha feel that you need for Billy Sheehan sound. So very affordable and very, very good, very fast necks on the BB series. So great.
That's a good setup for £988.
Yeah, that's it. Well, £988, because now I'm going to give a couple of options here. At £988, the pedal you could get is, we spoke about it before, the Billy Sheehan Signature EBS Drive. Yeah. And I was thinking, well, there you go. The EBS drive pedal is £179, which is it makes it quite an expensive,
it's quite an expensive drive pedal.
Sounds incredible.
it has
an EQ on it and an effects loop, and it does sound phenomenal.
Really?
Pedal has an effects loop.
Yes, really, because he runs a compressor through it and after it.
Oh, okay, right, okay.
Double compression.
Good. So is it two button?
More compression. More,
it's single.
Good.
Right.
It's like the, say for example, the stereo outs on like some of the Strymon pedals, where you can run another pedal through. So just the effect is affected by what's in the effects loop. It doesn't affect the rest of your signal chain.
And you don't need an on off because you just turn the pedal.
You just turn the pedal off.
So for example, if you wanted a drive if you always wanted, I suppose, to have like a delay with it. So every time you played the drive pedal, it had some delay on it. As soon as you turn that on,
it would just affect.
Which is a great idea. That said, I was thinking about this on the way over, and I know I'm not quite playing by the rules because this change brings it to £1 over our £1,000 budget. I'll throw that pound in.
if someone buys this whole rig,
that's the Joe Branton promise.
If you buy this rig, I will throw the pound.
He will post you a pound.
Yes,
which will probably cost him £2,
I suppose. That's fine. But I was thinking, I'm not sure that drive is the most essential part of Billy Sheehan's sound. So I've swapped out the EBS drive for two pedals. One is the Philosopher's Rock compressor, because I just don't think you can have a Billy Sheehan sound without an awful lot of compression. Now, there is onboard compression on the 112C high drive.
On the amp,
I just think you need more. So the Pigtronics Philosopher's Rock, now Billy Sheehan until recently used the Pigtronics Philosopher's Tone.
Yeah,
he's changed to the MXR bass compressor now, but he was using the Philosopher's Tone. So the Philosopher's Rock is a more simple version of that. It comes in at £115 for the pedal, and it's got drive on it. It has a grit function.
That grit sound on the Philosopher stuff is really good.
Yeah, it's great, and I think it's actually quite an essential Billy Sheehan kind of compressed drive. So I think that in that one pedal, it gives you a really good budget access into his sort of tone. And the other thing that you just can't have if you want to sound like Billy Sheehan, you can't not have, is chorus, obviously. For which there are lots of options, and I could have done it under, but I wanted something really good that would be a really good chorus. So I thought the one that I use, which I think sounds great for getting a Billy Sheehan-esque chorus sound, which is the MXR Micro Chorus,
yeah.
Which comes in at £66, bringing us that £1 over. But they're great, the Micro Chorus. You've just got one control on there, and it's rate, so you can whack it the whole way up and get a kind of vibrato-esque detuned effect.
Get that kind of sci-fi sound.
Yeah, exactly, which I use it for a lot. Or, you know, run it somewhere in the middle and you just get a really kind of classic 80s hair, purple leather jackets and leggings sort of chorus sound.
So what you're wearing now?
Yeah.
Good. Audio.
Yeah.
Well, there we go. So we actually jumped over two or three artists there. I think we should maybe do some more of this next week, because there's a few that I'd like to talk a bit more about, but we've talked for a long time already.
And maybe if any listeners have anyone in particular they want to sound like.
In fact, that'd be great. Give us a challenge.
Sound like Joe Brantland for £100,000.
Well, you can't do it because you need him to send you a quid.
Oh yeah.
But no, I mean, I think this is good. This is quite exciting. We could do this more. If anyone wants to set us a challenge to sound like, I don't know, sound like
the bass one should definitely be a higher budget.
No.
It costs us more money to sound good than it does you guys.
So just let us know.
Play better.
Let us know, basically. If there's an artist who you want to know how to sound like for under £1,000, podcast@gak.co.uk, email in and let us know. Gents, we're really close to time, but let's hurry through some staff picks and we've got some questions. Jay Cross, what have you been playing this week?
I've been criticised a lot recently, mainly by Matt Knight.
This is news to me.
Do you want me to criticise you as well?
No, I've been criticised a lot recently
for being a bit too
close-minded. Now, I don't think I'm close-minded, but he was saying you only choose Fender and Gibson stuff, which firstly isn't true, and secondly, I've counteracted you this week.
He used to play a seven-string, man. He's diverse.
I had an Ibanez seven-string. Oh no, that kind of doesn't really help because I've chosen an Ibanez today. Cheers, Joe. But no, okay. So this week, we've been a little bit quiet in the shop this week, and so I went and had a little look around and thought, okay, what's come in fairly recently that I've not played that isn't Fender or Gibson or Boss
isn't in your eyesight
or Roland? Oh, don't bring my eyesight into this.
Sorry.
For the world's most short-sighted man.
For those who can't see. Jay has glasses.
Anyway, I sort of remember what we were talking about a few weeks ago about the an option for a 335 or, you know, a big Gibson hollow body sound without spending that, you know, £2,000 or whatever on a 335. And I looked at some of the Ibanez stuff. And I picked out something that I hadn't played before. I'd seen in the store, and I'd seen people play, and thought it sounded good, but I'd never actually sat down with, which was the Ibanez AM93. It's bloody brilliant. Can I say bloody?
Yes.
I just did. It's bloody brilliant. It's an absolutely incredible guitar. It looks kind of like an SG in that you've got the two. It's like a hollow body SG, I guess. You've got the two horns. Big hollow body F holes. The top on the one, especially on the one that we've got here right now. I mean, you just couldn't believe it when
quite
you saw
maple,
it, could you?
But it looks, although it's obviously only a veneer because the actual
of
guitar
course,
is
yeah.
a thin hollow body, it looks really deep and
yeah,
rich, which often on cheaper guitars or more affordable guitars, when they put a quilt top on, they can look almost like a photo.
And
then
like a little forced as well. Yeah. Like a little sort of, a bit like it's a bit of an afterthought.
We can put this on because we can.
Yeah, whereas this one, this one looks, and we've had two in this week, and the one that we've got in right now looks absolutely amazing. It comes in two finishes. One is like a trans red, and one is like a sort of trans yellowy sunburst. The pickups that they use are the Ibanez Super 58s, Super 58 Customs. They're just brilliant. I tried it trying to play. I mean, I'm far from a jazz player, but I know a couple of jazz chords, so I just played those. over and over again, and on the neck pickup, and it sounded great. And then I turned the gain up on the amp, and the drive sounds absolutely brilliant. So yeah, if you're after something that if you want something hollow body, but you can't afford to drop the $2,000 on a 335, and you don't want an Epiphone, have a look at some of the, like, I mean, we've spoken about it before, the Artcore stuff, brilliant. But yeah, this, especially this AM93, and if I'm not mistaken, this one, I think we're the only people that have them.
Yes, they're limited edition, and also I believe they're a GAK exclusive.
So
I was really pleasantly surprised, because the Artcore stuff is very good, but obviously there is quite a big jump up to the next thing price wise, yep. But there's also a jump up in quality.
Yeah,
this, for not much more money than the regular Artcore stuff, just feels amazing.
Yeah,
you know, it feels very nice indeed.
So yeah, my soft pick of the week is the Ibanez Matt Knight AM93. Great guitar.
Matt Knight, what have you been playing this week?
Hold up, I've got to go to a sound check.
Okay,
can I grab my staff pick before I go?
Yeah, tell us your staff pick.
I'm bypassing the normal order here.
We've put an effects loop in the in the chain,
and so
before we get to Matt Knight, we've gone round to Joe Brandon, and then we'll come back. Do I have to do mine again after you? Is that how it works?
No.
It's not like Uno. You don't have to
It's
not like skip a go.
Joe Brandon, what's your star pick?
Well, this week, I was working in the shop on Saturday, and a bloke came in from Australia who wanted to buy a Gibson bass whilst he was over here. Apparently they're not very easy to get hold of in Australia, and he tried out a few things, and he was kind of looking at he tried out the Thunderbird and the non-reverse Thunderbird and the EB bass, which all have very, very similar kind of pickups and sound. And then he tried the Gibson Les Paul bass, which I think is a very underrated bass by Gibson, which obviously has completely different pickups in it. And it was only because I was listening to him kind of compare them that I realised just how different sounding the Les Paul bass is for a Gibson instrument. Those the metal covered smaller humbuckers that they have on the Les Paul bass are much toppier, and the positioning is much more jazz bass style, so you've got one kind of bang in the middle and one right on the bridge, so they sound very, very tight and punchy, and the bass is still really heavy, it's still all solid mahogany, but it just seems to have a presence that I find lacking on sort of jazz basses and that sort of thing, but still with that sort of tight top end that you miss off of precision basses. And I just thought it actually made a really great partnership of the P bass and the jazz bass, the two biggest, most popular basses there are.
You would think that they're going to sound just really dark,
yeah,
because they're like you say, it's mahogany body and
a pair of humbuckers. Yeah.
You think, all right, that's going to sound really boomy,
like a Gibson bass,
well, like an EB sort of thing.
Yeah.
But actually, it ends up sounding more like a Thunderbird. Kind of a bit springy, a bit more attack to it, more like you say, a bit more of that direct nature of a P bass, but with a bit of the kind of top end of a jazz.
Yeah, exactly. So it kind of just reminded me of that bass. I mean, other than the fact they look wicked in bass format. I mean, the one that we have in at the moment is black, and it's black with binding and chrome hardware, and they just look amazing as a bass with that sort of massive neck and the weight. They're so heavy, but it's such a reassuring weight, and I just think they sound brilliant and a really underrated bass in the Gibson arsenal. Because
I agree,
unlike the Thunderbird, which I think has really separated itself from the Firebird and really kind of become a bass in its own right, the Les Paul bass will always be judged as kind of, Gibson doing a bass version of a really popular guitar. But it's actually a wicked bass in its own right, really with its own sound.
Joe, head off to your sound check.
I'm going sound checking, everyone. Someone say what my email address is and Twitter.
We will do, yeah, we'll inform people.
I've got my first gig playing synth instead of bass tonight.
Good luck.
I'm pretty worried about it.
Are you playing it like a keytar? Really high.
Elise's Vortex.
I know. Really cheap. I bought an Elise's Micron, but
Again, Elisa's Vortex, the kind of entry level keytar.
I did just say that.
He did just say that.
Yeah. It's the entry level keytar. Did you know that, Joe?
You know the Elisa's Vortex?
Wait, what's it called?
The Elisa's
Vortex.
Vortex.
Okay.
Have we been stuck in some sort of.
Yeah, we have.
Elisa's Vortex.
I'm not going to miss you guys.
Podcast is sponsored by the Elisa's Vortex. Just letting everyone know.
Bye, everyone.
Bye, Joe.
Manite, what have you been playing this week?
Well, for people who know me, I'm a big fan of Twin Peaks. And there's a pedal out there that makes it me sound exactly like the intro music to Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
And that is the Strymon Flint tremolo and reverb. And I plugged it in yesterday after waiting to try one for ages, because we've had Strymon pedals for a few weeks now, and every time I go to plug one in, someone's bought it.
Yeah.
And it's I plug in a lot of pedals, and I know I exaggerate, someone's like, yeah, I've got to buy that and that and that. He's just absolutely phenomenal.
The Flint sounds brilliant. A mate of mine bought one the other day, on a day that you weren't here, and it's a shame that you weren't here, because he made it sound absolutely incredible. And I know, listen, I'm a big fan of your guitar playing, and I don't want you to take this the wrong way. He made it sound better than you did when you were playing it.
The thing for me is, reverb, like, you know, you can use delay and chorus in loads of different ways, and this, that, and the other. Reverb always just sounds, I don't know, reverb is, they all sound different, but this is the first time I've plugged one in and gone, man, that sounds like I'm plugging into a Fender amp.
Yeah. So with the Flint, there's three different tremolo sounds and three different reverb sounds. What were you, because there's on the tremolo, there's what?
They call it a 61 harmony or harmony. It's more of like a uni vibe type thing. So it's based on a real kind of, I think what they call like a bias circuit, where it physically the power is sucked and added back to the valves. And then they do more like a traditional kind of like blackface sort of Fender
trend type sound.
And then they do like a 65, which once again is that sort of a later era sort of Fender trend. So one sounds kind of uni vibey, one sounds a little bit more sort of like pulsy, and then one's kind of a little bit more choppy. Basically, is kind of the easiest way I can describe it.
And then with the reverbs, you've got what, a 63?
You've got 60s, 70s, and 80s style reverb. Right. So 60s is based on once again like a Fender, like spring tank, like 70s is like a plate reverb, which was used a lot. So like when you go to like Van Halen and kind of that rock stuff.
More abrasive.
Because a plate reverb was a huge plate of metal that sat in somewhere in the studio, the back of the studio, probably in a basement somewhere, where the sound was fed through and recorded, basically. And then 80s is kind of that real kind of classic.
Phil Collins drum sound.
Yeah. And yeah, it's just, if you really like that dirty, swampy reverb with that kind of like fat tremolo, it's one of those, it's two pedals that kind of I've never really seen in a combination of another unit before.
Other than
for a multi effects
or like an amp
or an amp,
yeah, you know, but it's like an AC30 or deluxes have got,
I mean, there's loads, you know, tremolo and reverb were the things that came in an amp,
but you'd never really see it in a pedal.
Yeah.
I plugged it in and was like, this is phenomenal. I can't really describe it. I mean, you know, pop on the website. I think we might have some video demos on there, or maybe I should do one.
Yeah, definitely should, because it just sounds so good.
I mean, the first time I heard it, it was like, yeah, it's awesome. Input, stereo output, which is going to give you that kind of real sort of like, sort of tremolo panning. You get an expression pedal, which is always good, because you know, people like me like to use about a million different expression pedals. And I think there's like four hidden knobs as well, that like, I think if you, when you power it on, I think you hold down one of the buttons, and then one, and then two of the knobs do one thing, and if you hold down one of the other ones, they do another thing. So
really?
Tremolo boost and cut. So I think you can have, because you've got a mix control for the tremolo, but you've got no like volume control. Reverb, cut and boost are the same thing. Effect order, so you can have the tremolo before the reverb, or the reverb before the tremolo.
Really,
because what I have noticed, the only thing is, it's one of the only times I've thought it would probably sound better in an effects loop than it would in the front of the amp. If you're using something, if you're using a reverb sound with loads of like mix, you know, so you've got barely any dry signal, you put the drive on your amplifier and it just turns into one big mush. So I think you probably want to use a drive pedal before it. And the last one's tap subdivision. I'd imagine if you use an expression pedal, you can use the Strymon favourite switch, which also works as a tap tempo. And yeah, I think when you tap that, it'll subdivide
for the tremolo.
Yeah, the expression pedal. The nice thing about the Strymon is, yeah, you can buy this little thing called the favourite button, and you plug it in, and it will save one snapshot of your kind of favourite sound. So you can have your big swampy kind of tremolo, or your kind of out weird reverb sound, and you can always have that, but then you can also stomp on the pedal and have whatever it's set to.
Neat.
So that's kind of like having a you know,
it's a lot, having a nice old amp in a pedal.
£249, and I think that's probably the best £249 you'll ever spend on a reverb.
I was just going to say, I couldn't agree more. I think it sounds absolutely brilliant. Yeah. Like, just an absolutely brilliant,
I don't think you need more. I love the Hall of Fame.
The thing is people will be intimidated by the fact that it's £250. And £250 is, I'm sorry, Matt, you need to bring yourself back to reality here. £250 is a lot of money to spend on a pedal. But it sounds so good.
Yeah.
It sounds so good.
Yeah.
So, you know.
And, I will dispute that it sounds like the Twin Peaks sound, because you also need, obviously, a really 80s sounding chorus.
Of course.
And a baritone.
And a baritone. Of course. But yeah, it's for getting part way to that sound.
But for that kind of weird, vibey, Lynch-esque, like, you know.
Yeah, it's atmospheric.
Yeah, and with a Bigsby, something with a Bigsby on it, and that, and...
You're there.
A very clean valve combo. Blues Junior, perhaps.
I think we need to move on, because the three of us have started talking about Twin Peaks.
Reverb.
Well, there's
too much Twin Peaks in this place.
The three of us just talk about Twin Peaks when we're not at work, and now we're at work talking about Twin Peaks and guitars.
Crazy.
This is scary. We should move on. What's your pick of the week?
So my stuff pick of the week. So outside of working here, outside of guitars generally, I do some filmmaking bits and pieces, and some radio work and stuff, and I always use little handy recorders, and I've had various Zoom bits, and I currently use a Roland, and there's loads of other bits on the market. But my soft pick this week is an intriguing little device, actually by Zoom. It's the latest in their handy recorder series, the H6. Now, it's got, in terms of the like handheld recorders, it's got more inputs than anything else that's really available. And so you've got four combi jack ins, so jack or XLR in, plus you've got a microphone capsule that sits on the top, which can be a stereo in. So that's your four. That's your, where the H6 comes from. So it's essentially the four ins plus the two that you get off the mic. The clever thing about it is that the mic capsule can be switched out for another type of mic. And Matt, you saw these today. They come with just a condenser and also like a stereo pair.
Yeah.
And they just like clip onto the top of the unit, and you can pop them off, and for which application. But I've also seen photos, they're doing like a shotgun mic version.
Oh, wow.
So if you want to pick out someone like really directional, really far away, you pop on this shotgun mic, which is about, I guess, like 5 or 6 inches long, on top of the unit, and kind of just point it in their direction. And it gives them scope to do loads of stuff. They could release, you know, like a wireless unit that then the receiver clips onto the top of that, and then that can be your in for that.
And then, you know, it's, I think I was saying to you, they're doing another one with two more combi jacks on it, so you can have like six mics plugged in. So then it becomes amazing for like recording a drum track in a room. So if you're if you're just kind of doing a DIY thing and your mate's got a drum kit set up, you could plug six mics in and record that. You could record it for band practice, so you could have a vocalist sing directly into it. You could mic up a guitar and a bass amp and have the snare drum and the bass drum and an ambient mic all plugged in, and they'll all have analog gains.
So it goes from being like a handy recorder for field use, you know, working in film, or if you're doing radio, to something that, like you're saying, you can record a whole band practice with, all on external mics, which nothing else in the kind of handy range by Zoom or any other little handy recorder is really doing. Also colour screen on there as well.
Wow.
And with the four that are on there, because I've got some sales training on it today, they're all analogue as well. They're little volumes rather than incremental, so you can actually, you know, almost mix it on the fly.
Yeah.
And 128 gig SD card in that as well. So and you can record at WAV full quality. So
how much are they?
They are £329. They're going to be, you know, for anyone who's doing, for, you know, video work or anything like that, just a really, really good option. There's certainly more expensive stuff out there that's maybe got slightly higher quality converters and stuff like that. But for something that's got a lot of ins and is really flexible, yeah, Zoom H6 handy recorder. Definitely
so
worth
you can out. You can switch out the mic for different types. Does yeah. that mean potentially moving away from music and stuff, I could live out my John Motson fantasies and put like one of those football commentator mics on? And just take it to my non-league
the one
match.
That actually comes with it sort of looks like that.
Oh,
there's a
amazing
picture.
I want to be like, I just want to be like Motti.
Why don't you
look at that.
Talking of you know, you guys and your non-league love, why don't you just have four lapel mics plugged in and just record live football commentary
that
on that.
That is brilliant. Maybe we should start doing that. That's
a new
YouTube series.
I'll contact the guy at Zoom and see if we can sort something out. It'd be wicked to actually kind of
sponsorship.
Maybe we should say, oh yeah, we're just going to test them in different areas. By the way, we need four lapel mics so that we can pretend to be John Motson, Steve Claridge.
Gary Lineker, he does football. He does football. I know that. Gary Lineker, he does football. And
Gary Lineker,
and
yeah,
crisps.
Well done.
Right. Just quickly, deal of the week, worth mentioning. It can't be staff picks, but I thought it was worth mentioning because we've already picked it before. TC Electronic Ditto Loopers are now £85.
I sold three today.
Just announced today, 85 yep. quid. If you listen to the podcast, hopefully we've still got some stock, but that deal I think is going to keep running.
I think
get one.
I've got a feeling, I'm not 100% on this, I think that is the new price point.
Yeah.
So
brilliant.
Just get them.
Yeah. Really, really, really sorry if you bought one after we said that you should have bought one 2 months ago when they were our staff pick. And they were 109 quid or whatever. Yeah, sorry about that. But if you didn't buy one then, they're cheap.
But also,
now.
Not that sorry, because you could definitely run two.
You could definitely run two.
So now, instead of spending over 200 quid, get one at 85 quid.
I actually saw a band a couple of weeks ago who had both. There was two guitarists in the band. This band, Circle Takes the Square, this hardcore band. And like sort of atmospheric-y hardcore band.
Sounds good.
Both guitarists each had
two
RC30s on the pedal board.
Boss RC30 loop.
So
station.
You could absolutely live out your atmospheric fantasies with two Ditto loopers.
For not much money. £85. Couldn't have it as a staff pick because we've already picked it, but I thought definitely worth mentioning as deal of the week.
Mm.
Right, let's do some questions. We've got a few, and the first one actually is going to be much easier to answer now that we've done the artist suggestions at the top of the show, because the answer's kind of in there. This is from Lee via email. He says, I've had a Marshall MG Series 15 since I started playing. I want to upgrade to a better quality Marshall. Any recommendations? Also, tube or solid state? The reason I chose Marshall is for that classic rock blues vibe. Any recommendations of other amps that you can give me? I'm open to suggestions. Looking to spend $250 to $350. Personally, I would say we talked about the MA100C at $399.
Yeah.
Mm. All valve Marshall, 100 watts, but it still sounds good at a low volume. Yeah, that would be the way to go. That if you really want that kind of Marshall experience and that kind of raw British sound, the MA series is great. Mm-hmm. 100 watts will let you go and do a gig as well, and it's in a combo that's kind of manageable.
And in a, I will throw it in there. We will discuss in more depth in the next few weeks when they arrive. Me and Jay got a nice try of the new Hayden Mini Mofos that are coming. 350 quid, 15 watt head, single channel, really British sounding because they're a British company.
So loud
for 15 watts, and they're all valve as well.
And here's the thing, and I think we can probably say this without offending anyone. Both Matt and I were very, very sceptical. Neither of us have really been Hayden fans in the past, I think it's fair to say.
I think that, you know, they're just a company in the background that we don't really see.
Honestly, they came in yesterday with the Mini Mofo, and it's 15 watts switchable down to 2 watts. I assume we're allowed to talk about this. He didn't say we couldn't.
Yeah, yeah, we've got them on order. So
they're 15 watts switchable down to 2 watts. Because as he quite rightly said, actually, like there's no point in 7 watts really, I don't think, because it's still too loud for bedroom use. It's definitely not loud enough for gigging. So yeah, 15 switchable down to 2 watts. We had it on the 15 watt setting in the shop, mm-hmm. in this room that we're in right now, plugged into a Boogie Womba 12. I couldn't get it past. I don't think I got it past. There's gain and master. I had the gain turned up. I couldn't get the gain. I couldn't get the volume past like maybe 6.
Yeah.
It was so loud for 15 watts. It was unbelievable.
I think I'm going to throw it out there before we go too in depth to it, before we've actually got them here.
Yeah.
But I think serious contender to with the love of Blues Juniors and AC 15s for me. I think for the size, for the money.
Yeah. I want to sit down with the Hayden cabs. Yeah. They're doing cabs,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, I think so.
But the Mini Mofo is definitely something to watch out for. I think that may well be something that we get a little bit more excited about once they arrive.
I think so.
So,
okay. So hopefully, Lee, that answers your question a bit. If you're looking for a combo, then definitely check out the MA100C. It's a bit over your budget, but not massively. Probably worth spending the extra because it will be diggable.
Yeah, definitely.
Also, in the kind of near future, we're going to be doing the Hayden stuff. It'll be a head and cab, but again, slightly over budget.
They're doing combos as well.
Okay, so we'll check out those combos. We'll talk about those in
really reasonably priced. Yeah, they sound good.
Derek via email says, "What's the most common riff you hear customers playing when test driving a guitar? Is it still Stairway to Heaven?" I think we said that it wasn't last week. What is the most common riff?
I actually responded to Derek personally via email to this because I sort of forgot we were saving these for the podcast, and Mark gave me a bit of a glare. So sorry to preempt everything, but I emailed Derek and I said that the three, I don't think there's one in particular, but the three are Sweet Child of Mine, Enter Sandman, and Seven Nation Army.
I hear a lot of riffs from bands I don't know. I think I'm out of touch with the modern.
Is that not just a riff? Like, it might not be a band that you don't know. It might just be someone playing a riff.
For me is that's weird, again, having worked here for a long time and not really listening to kind of big guitar music. Like, I listen to bands who play guitar, but I don't listen to, you know, I don't,
it's not, it's
I don't
that,
know a lot
yeah.
of Metallica songs, for example. When I hear a Metallica song that some like is on, I don't know, MTV or hear it on Spotify or whatever, and then I go, that's what
that is. Yeah, that's what I mean. That's what I hear this thing, then one day I'll go, Where do I know this one from? Work.
The one for me was I can't remember where I was the other day, but I heard this riff. I was going, it went diddly din din diddly din din din, and it's that I think it's Tool. Is it Tool?
Actually, yeah.
And I hear that all the time in the bass department.
I've got one. I think the most common heard riff for me doesn't come from guitars; it comes from basses, and it's that Muse bass riff.
Yeah,
for that song,
that we know from here, but don't know the name. If anyone does know the name, again, feel free to email in podcast@gak.co.uk.
Please don't tweet me. I hate Muse.
Right, Adam via email. Adam actually sent us a really long email. Really nice to hear from you. And there was multiple questions, but for the sake of time, I've kind of like summed it all up. Basically, he wants to know about reverb pedals.
Yes.
He just says, if you guys could talk about verb pedals, that would be awesome. Now, Matt, you've, I guess, already said that the Flint is the one that you would go for.
I was talking to you earlier, because obviously I knew this was on here, and I said I was going to talk about the Flint. So since we were running low on time, I thought I would have a backup of kind of the three to look at, because I said, you should definitely look at the Flint. To him in an email, and he was like, it's a lot of money, as we said. So, in ascending order, I suppose it would be.
I already know what you're going to say.
Holy Grail.
Yeah.
Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And probably the Flint.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would say, I mean, I've got a Hall of Fame, which I just think is just brilliant. Like, super versatile. There's loads of different sounds on there. And the Holy Grail is great. I mean, I had a Holy Grail. At one point, I had
the Holy Grail, the Holier Grail, and the Holiest
Grail. Yeah, okay, brilliant. Yeah, I really like the Holier Grail.
Holy Trinity, if you will.
There we go. I really like the Holier Grail.
Had a really good gated sound on it.
Well, I never used that.
Yeah, but
The gated stuff was good.
Did you use it for vocals?
I did use it for vocals. I used it for in the same band I used that SD-1 for, but it fell apart because I stamped on it too hard.
Let's put this out there, because they're pretty reliable pedals. Jay didn't stamp on it too hard. He jumped on it far too hard.
That's what happened. But that's what happened. I use a Hall of Fame. I don't use it for vocals. I do use it for guitar.
There are other ones out there, but.
Yeah, there's some good stuff out there at the moment, but it's difficult for us to look past the Hall of Fame, just because I just think it's so good. I really, really love the Hall of Fame. The other one that I would, if we're going for three sort of quote unquote budget ones, the other one I'd add in there is the Boss Fender Reverb.
Yes.
The FRV1, which I think is great, is really, really great. That's the other one I'd drop in there.
Excellent. Well, I hope that's answered your question. If you've got any questions at all, do email them in, podcast@gak.co.uk. We're also thinking about doing some sort of live Google Hangout, maybe a version of the podcast, maybe experimenting with, you know, getting some customers to bring your questions to us live, and maybe we'll do something, maybe it'll be on Skype. If that's something that you might be interested in, and we want to try it with podcast listeners first, again, do get in touch, podcast@gak.co.uk. You can also get in touch with us, as always, via our Twitter, which I'll answer, probably, @gak_co_UK, or on Facebook, facebook.com/GAK Music. Or you can get in touch with me directly on Twitter, @mark_random. Please do add me, because Jay's had loads of new followers, and that makes me upset.
What can I tell you? I'm just better than you.
If they do want to follow you, Jay,
I'm more endearing.
Where can they find you?
My Twitter is JAYBM1, which is my name, and then the postcode in which I love.
Okay.
So JAYBM1. I've been talking a lot about... less about football, more about guitars actually, and a bit about cats, which are the three things that I like more than most. JAYBM1, shoot me an email if you've got anything specific, j.cross@gak.co.uk. And please do get in touch with us if you do have any questions, or if you just like listen to the podcast. We really do like hearing the people. To be honest with you, like the podcast, like every week when Mark tells us how many podcast downloads have been, we're constantly like, really, people care this much about listening to us? And it's great, but we do like to know that people are actually listening to us. It's not just you're just subscribed. So please do shoot us a message. We're all very friendly.
Matt Knight, how can people interact with you, talk to you?
You can email me. I like emails. I like emails a lot. On matt.knight@gak.co.uk. Or you can tweet me. I have had some new followers. I had three. @matt_knight. See, that's Knight, S-I-E on the end.
And Joe Branton is not now here.
I think we should give out his mobile number because he's not here.
No. Joe Branton is... you can get him via email if you want to talk about any bass stuff. It's joe.branton@gak.co.uk. Or you can follow him on Twitter, which is Yosef_900. Thanks so much for listening this week. Please do get in touch, tell us that you're listening to the podcast, or send us your questions, as Jay mentioned, podcast@gak.co.uk. thanks very much.
Cheers.
Bye-bye. Today, I went to Bagelman. I haven't been to Bagelman for a while. A lot of people think it's Bagelman, but they don't realise that Bagelman is actually his surname.
Hans. Of the guy who happens to run a bagel shop.
Yeah, Hans Bagelman. It's like how, there is actually a word for it. I can't remember what it is, but you've got like a predisposition to go into a career which is related to your name.
Really?
Yeah. Jesus. Which is why I'm always angry.
Ah, that makes sense. But hold on.
Because my name's Jay Cross and I'm always angry. And it's why Matt, at the weekend, does Renaissance fairs, dresses up as a knight. And why Mark, Pax Am.
Jesus, that's but Branton is
right pickle.
Well, no, it's come on from the from Brown Town. This doesn't help me.